I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is Wednesday, which means it's time for The Front Three with me, Adam Bowe, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Hello, how you doing?
Not bad. How you doing? You sound pumped.
Yeah, I'm absolutely pumped. Got home tonight to no electricity, so I'm doing this live from the 5th century.
It's almost as if you're living with a problematic housemate. They're
living with
well.
A mentalist.
Yeah. Speaking of mentalists,
Paul
Dave O'Brien.
Yes. Hello. How are you, Lance?
All good. And I'm delighted to say Chris Ennage is here once again.
Good evening, chaps.
Big stuff, guys. We are going to be discussing a couple of the big transfer stories from the past week. We're also going to be answering your questions. And it's a pleasure to have Jake Cohen on a podcast later on in this week's Talking Point, talking through how transfers work, a little bit of behind the scenes info, busting some transfer myths. He did a great article on the Set Pieces website earlier this week. Really fascinating stuff. We spoke to him earlier, so be sure to stay tuned for that later on. First though, as always, comment of the week is going to go this week to Ryan13265 from the USA. He said, great podcast with lots to offer for all fans of the game. Great podcast where meaningful and intelligent discussion about soccer had better than most professional podcasts, insinuating that maybe we're not professional. But at the same time, he gave it 5 stars. He said it's intelligent, knowledgeable people who just want to discuss and talk about the game they love. Great that stuff. So, Ryan, thank you so much for the review. Let's get into a few little bits of transfer news, essentially. First up, Romelu Lukaku. Guys, it looks like he could be on the verge of that return to Chelsea. £70 million is the reported fee. Loic Remy could be used as a make-weight going the other way. Now, it's an interesting one, Dave. Of course, another buyback. We're seeing that with Paul Pogba. Hopefully, that's going to be confirmed this week. A club who let this player leave a few years ago, buying back for a huge fee nowadays. Chelsea fans not happy about this one, though, despite the fact I think he's averaged a goal every other game in the Premier League since he arrived. Chelsea fans still complaining he doesn't have that first touch, Dave. £70 million, is he in any way worth it?
Well, you know, the stats that you just mentioned there, he's scored 60 goals in the last 4 seasons in the Premier League. Only Sergio Aguero scored more. He scored more than Olivier Giroud, Christian Benteke, Harry Kane, Robin Van Persie, Daniel Sturridge, Wayne Rooney, Yaya Toure, obviously been scoring a few goals. So he has calibre. But I agree with the first touch issue. He technically isn't a great player, but he's young and can improve. Being 23 years old, already scored over 50 goals in the Premier League. That is calibre and that is talent. And there's only 5 other players that have got to that feat. But I do think he's a strange player. He's got the build of a target man, but he doesn't have his all-round play isn't of a target man. He's more of a poacher. He's like a modern-day poacher, someone that's really physically developed, but does his business in the penalty area, you know, with those one-touch finishes, or the, you know, mazy dribbles. But, you know, get the ball to his feet outside the area, get him into the play a bit too early is a bit of a mistake for Romelu Lukaku right now. But what could it be? It could be really good with the combination with Diego Costa, though. Costa probably works a little bit better with the partner. And if you know, Chelsea have played a 4-2-4 or 4-4-2 in pre-season, could be a good way to go. But it loses control in midfield for Conte. And I think that could be an issue in the Premier League next season. I think midfield control is going to be about, that's going to be it.
I mean, I sort of touch on this later on with Jake Lawrence about how I feel like this summer, you know, we spoke a few weeks ago about how a lot of players now seem to be 30 million players. All of a sudden this summer, that seems to be the lowest fee you almost pay for this sort of, you know, decent enough footballer. Again, we're seeing Lukaku, like I said, that huge, I mean, it's a huge loss on a player. They sold him for 25 million 2 years ago, I think it was, buying him back for 70. And understand clubs are generating huge amounts of revenue. They're generating more money than ever. But this sort of, especially in the Premier League, it seems like there's a complete lack of business sense in terms of maximising value from transfers. Do you think it's a problem? Do you think it's something that's going to come back to haunt some of these clubs?
What do you mean? I think it already is. It's surely the Pogba one is.
Well, I don't know. They're making so much money, it's almost like it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, make hay while the sun shines. Is obviously the case with Manchester United and probably with Chelsea as well. They're both cashing in on those things. But at the same time, it doesn't mean you can automatically just go and sort of spend billion. I almost feel like it, you know, they take their cash lessons from ridiculous 1980s films about Wall Street. it's unusual. It's not going to last forever. It is somewhat of a bubble, I think, within the game. You cannot continue to do this kind of spending. And at the same time, I think it is, you know what, it probably teaches Chelsea yet another lesson, or it just basically shows Chelsea fans how poorly managed their club is. I mean, you know, for years they did not value what they had, and they loaned so many players out, and they didn't develop their youth properly, and their manager did have a short-termist view. And, you know, people didn't identify that as a real issue because at the time they were winning. And, you know, I just think just short-term winning for a long-term loss probably isn't great for a club.
Do you think, Chris, it speaks to a strange problem in the game that there's not many top-class players available? And as
that's in not true. These sort of key...
Do you know, why are Chelsea paying £70 million for Lukaku? You look at world-class strikers, you look at Arsenal. Arsenal fans always banging on, we need a world-class striker. Benzema was obviously the option. That's not happening. Gonzalo Higuain, you look at Lukaku, and then you start going, okay, how many top strikers are there out there to buy? Is it a case that these players aren't there, Chris? Or is it a case that there is value to be found in the market? But clubs like Chelsea, clubs like Manchester United, they're almost not interested in looking at value. They'd rather sign a player who maybe could boost, you know, marketable aspects of the club in certain respects. It just seems bizarre when you've got... I mean, you look at Miralem Pjanic, for example. How much did he cost Juventus? Was it 30-odd million? And you look at someone like Paul Pogba, who's going to cost 100 million. You look at their stats, it doesn't seem to add up in a way. Why is it that Premier League clubs are playing these hugely inflated transfer fees? I know Juventus... You could argue do the same thing with Gonzalo Higuain.
I think because the need for instant gratification has increased significantly. Let's take, say, Chelsea as a good example. They missed out on the Champions League last season because they had an atrocious season. That will impact a variety of different aspects of the football club. Financially, it will mean they now get significantly less money. I imagine the supporters will be impacted. You could maybe even see a bleed over into ticket sales. Those are just... the impact superficially as we look at it now. I imagine there are lots of other wider ranging things. So when you then have the desire to go out and purchase a striker, do you want to take that risk again and buy someone from abroad who may not fit perfectly when you can go and get someone in Romelu Lukaku that you know can score goals in the Premier League, actually already knows your club and its infrastructure because he's been in there, and then equally has a smooth transition? That's the problem, is that for clubs now, especially the clubs I think at the very elite end of the table, they are so pressured and so painfully aware of the fact that they can't even fail for a season because it will set them back considerably. And I think if you look at Man United, that's exactly why in the same summer they're looking to conclude deals for Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Paul Pogba.
It is. Do you think there is at all an element of conservatism or financial? I know it sounds unusual to call 75 million financial conservatism, and 100 million for Pogba the same. But essentially, you are getting it, Adam, that these clubs don't really have the time to take a wild card or a bet on any of these players who they need to develop, and therefore they almost go down the easy route of, well, we'll put 75 million on this guy. because it almost becomes a self, like 75 million and 100 million almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I think you're right in the sense that Chris speaks of the risks and the pitfalls and the consequences of missing out. As he says, these elite clubs, Chelsea miss out on the Champions League again next season. Where does that leave them? As he says, Manchester United, all of a sudden they've gone for players and a manager. Especially, remember when Jose Mourinho was appointed, they were talking about this is a manager who doesn't really suit the philosophy of the club. This is not someone they'd ever usually go for, but they're in such a dire situation in effect. They need to get back to those winning ways.
What is the philosophy of Chelsea? What is Chelsea's philosophy? Because all I tend to see is it tends to be...
I specifically meant Manchester United.
Oh, right, okay. What is exactly the philosophy of Manchester United?
There's a difference between philosophy and identity, remember?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So what is the philosophy of Manchester United?
I think the philosophy of Manchester United, as they see it, is a club that not only takes the ready-made stars, the likes of Zlatan, but also produces its own on the streets of Manchester.
So essentially a Galactico idea.
I wouldn't say Galactico, because to me Galactico is let's go out and buy 11 of the best players and make...
No, because the Galactico idea originally was one star... one local kid.
Okay, that's not how I remember it, but I'm happy to agree with you.
They lost sight of that pretty quickly, probably.
I mean, it was the Pavons and Zidane's idea, wasn't it, really? So you're right, I think, in that sense. But I think as time has progressed, it's evolved.
It's just become Galacticos.
Every player that's big and is wanted, that's who Real Madrid must buy.
Yeah, that did change somewhat, yeah. And then what's Chelsea's philosophy?
I mean,
divide and conquer.
I think if you look at its transfers of late, its identity is actually let us buy players that can become stars with us, the likes of Diego Costa, etc. But then also have a very steady stream of players a few tiers below that who are younger, the likes of Andreas Christensen, De Bruyne, Lukaku, who then we can take a more patient approach with, loan out and develop into stars.
Interesting.
Sell and buy them back for 70 million.
The irony being, of course, yeah. Well, this is exactly, and this is why Lawrence makes a fantastic point when he says there were people saying that Mourinho doesn't fit the blueprint, because he didn't have that patience. So when he saw an opportunity to make a lot of money on Lukaku that he could spend on players, he took the offer straight away. When actually, you could argue with him and De Bruyne, it would have been much better to sit there and let them stew, or even put the buzzword of the summer, which is a buyback clause in.
It just feels so. The whole, I feel like the whole market this summer sort of illustrates how insane the whole thing is. You know, you'd like to think clubs have long-term planning in place and they've got youth infrastructure being built. And like you say, Chris, you're talking about the players Chelsea loaning out. That you hope they're building to the future there. But I feel like this summer you're just sort of like everyone is scrabbling around. Like you say, the consequences of missing out on the top four, of not achieving success every single year, is so dire that you're like, right, we have got to chuck 75 million at Lukaku. I know we sold him 2 years ago, but we've got to chuck that money on him, or otherwise we're going to fall behind. We have to do this. And it's
laziness.
More short-term.
I'd love to see the financial breakdown per goal or what they, because there must be a way that they can at least, justify some of that money. So they'll be saying, right, okay, we're going to take a £35 million hit on this, but actually it would make sense to buy Romelu for 40. And then they can say, because, per goal, this is how much that is.
I doubt they do it that way. But that's a good way. I think that'd be a good method, but I very much doubt that's what football clubs do. I think there's laziness in the market, massive laziness. There's laziness to go and develop people.
Pogba's a lazy buy.
That's laziness. Yeah. That's a lazy buy. It's instantly getting someone in that's 23 years old from their own academy who was there that they didn't see for and push through to the right level, and then going back and buying him 3 years. That's laziness. That's laziness in player development. That's laziness in seeing what was actually going on in this fella's head, why he didn't get first team football at that time. That is 100%. Signing Zlatan Ibrahimovic, again, is laziness. Signing Henrik Mkhitaryan, a player that is getting, you know, guaranteed to get goals and assists from wide areas is laziness. It's not developing their own players.
Yeah, but Dave, yeah, well, Dave, I mean, there's laziness, and then, you know, it's the same as saying, it's sort of, yeah, oh, buying Daniel Sturridge is laziness, you know, because he's a clear guy who's going to get you something. I mean, McTiernan is a reasonable signing. His last signing, you can justify both those signs. It's not laziness.
It's laziness within the market that it's had got to come to a level that Man United have struggled for 3 years with their signings, and now they've had to do it. This has been like a four-year process of post-Ferguson, and in that whole time, the transfer windows have been very, very poor and lazy in a way. And now we're getting to this area now where we're like, shit, we've got to get Mourinho.
I mean, you see, no,
we need this instant success. Fans are getting pissed off. Manchester, gonna have to get these shirt sales. Fuck, shit, what are we doing? Where's the ship going? Oh, fuck, we just crashed into an iceberg. We're all fucking dead.
I think you get into Ed Woodward's head like that, Dave. That was freaky.
You've got to be careful not to make the exception the rule. I don't think Mkhitaryan is lazy.
I think,
actually, Pogba and Lukaku most definitely are, albeit for very different reasons. Chelsea had to give Mourinho power over those kind of things. Otherwise, I don't think he comes back. It is a lack of overall vision. That's why I think we see the likes of Dortmund continue to sell players like Mkhitaryan for such big money, and yet you look at who they've invested that money in.
So exactly, that's the laziness. Man United could have bought Ousmane Dembele for cheaper than they bought Amrit Mkhitaryan. Ousmane Dembele has a bigger potential, but he's not the instant success. But, and that's where the laziness comes in. It's that laziness of the lack of vision of a club is quite worrying in terms of. Well, it's just not worrying for me as a fan. It's worrying for the market. It's worrying for the global football environment.
You can't say though that it's laziness, because that may also be part of someone else's vision for what they want to build. So, you know, you could say it's all well and good getting Dembele, but actually it's also all well and good getting Mkhitaryan, because, you know, they're both reasonable buys. But I mean, the point is that it's and I think it's worth making this point with both Spurs and Arsenal at the moment, is that both those guys need the fullness of time in order for their plan to come to the fore. Yeah. And, you know, it's the same with Dortmund. You know, and Royce, in many ways, is one of the most vindicated players this summer. Captain of his club now, front cover of FIFA, and getting Götze back, essentially. All three of those things you could see as very long-term and short-term gains, all three of which must be incredibly satisfying for Dortmund.
And you could argue, Royce, if you want to use Dave's analogy, Royce is lazy because he was at Dortmund. Ooh. And then went to Gladbach. It doesn't necessarily work like that. I'm sure if you talk to the people at Manchester United, they will tell you buying someone like Dembele then makes it harder for Memphis Depay, who is just a few rungs ahead of him in terms of the development process, to get into the team long term. We don't have enough space to facilitate that. You almost need it to be like a garden. You need plants that you've just put into the soil. You also need ones that are slightly more mature.
But where are mature sunflowers? Where are sunflowers that are sitting in the garden that are overlooking the next door neighbours, seeing what they're doing? Where are the sunflowers at Manchester United?
Well,
and where
they're fucking their also, brother's wife, mate.
That's the bloody issue. The sunflowers have gone, haven't they? They've fucking shot off, pissed off.
You could argue that's Mkhitaryan and Zlatan. Those are the established players that, to varying degrees, Zlatan probably more so, have elite experience, have big game experience. Those are the ones that carry forth. And then you have the younger ones. Guys like Eric Bailly, who they've just picked up from VRL, that's a developmental project relative to the rest of the squad.
It is. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned Dortmund there, Lawrence, because obviously they have, you know, I think it's fair to say their transfer policy this summer is something to admire. They're snapping up a lot of promising young players. But do you feel generally that this is a trend that's going across Europe, the lack of value in the market, the lack of clubs trying to maximise the best from their transfers? Because, I mean, I mentioned Gonzalo Higuain there, but we're talking about the replacement for Higuain at Juventus is Arkadiusz Milic, who they've just splashed 30 million on. And I know, Chris, you know, we were speaking today for TFR, and you are unconvinced that move's going to come off well.
It's nothing against Milic personally. I just am concerned by some of the situations in his career, the fact that he didn't make it at Leverkusen, the fact that, again, he's found a lot of goals in the Dutch league, which is notorious for this kind of situation.
I know, I don't want to say it's laziness, but in terms of, you know, he had a good tournament, or he had a decent Euro 2016, all of a sudden Napoli are like, right, we've got all that Higuain money, let's splash 30 million on Milic, without that I don't know, that due diligence almost. It feels like, obviously, well, it's easy to say that from the outside.
Yeah, but Adam, come on. I mean, there were people who were also saying, well, I've loved him for a long time. Oh, you guys only find him at Euro 2016. It's also worth saying that, we know that when a club, we know how Spurs suffered in the transfer market after Bale went, because people went, well, sorry, we know you've got 100 million in the bank. Where's that money coming from? I think it's also worth saying that I think there are some untold pressures within the game, which I think happen in a lot of industries, but actually because A, people are professionals, they don't necessarily get talked about or spoken about. B, people are slightly in denial of what their role really is within the club, because either they want to make it bigger or they want to reduce it. And that depends on whether it's seen as a success or not. I.e. people like, scouts and people like that, or even someone at the top like Ed Woodward, do I have direct influence over the transfer? Maybe, maybe not. And then at the same time, there's also a really interesting podcast and book called Freakonomics, and one of their main writers, I can't remember his name, it's not the main one, but what the main economist who wrote the book is also a consultant. He speaks about a time when he went to an electronics company that was advertising across the city of a lot of different areas, right? And he went to the PR team and said to the PR team, listen, we need to work out how effective your advertising is. And you can do a very similar exercise in football. Maybe it isn't direct, but you can definitely do it. And he said, look, we need to stop advertising in newspapers during Christmas and Black Friday, because both of those, I think people are automatically going to buy anyway. And the PR team, instead of turning around and saying, yeah, we'll test that, said, yeah, but if we do that and it fails, it's our head on the block. And there's an element which is similar in football, which is essentially, if we make a transfer or if we go for a big risk and it fails, which is, essentially doing the money ball when you're not backed from the top to do that, buying a number of people who aren't proven within the league, etc., and that fails, then we get treated like Brendan Rodgers because we get treated as pariahs. Whereas if we go with the sure bets and we invest a lot of money, which we know is in the coffers anyway, then we're golden. And there are so
many. It's almost less risky in a way, isn't it?
Weirdly. Well, it is a lot less risky. But then you look at the outrage at clubs like Arsenal. You look at the outrage a couple of years ago at clubs like Spurs. You look at what Brendan Rodgers said at Liverpool, and then the way that he was treated as a pariah when it ultimately his model didn't fail but didn't come to fruition fast enough. And even then, I was watching Moneyball the other night, and even during the time when they needed a bit of time for that squad to gel together during the movie, people are saying they don't know what they're doing. These people have no idea. They've not taken this into account. They've not taken that into account. Because the fact is that this industry is also built upon narrative. And Kristen knows this. You know this. People are always looking for stories. And actually, it doesn't matter whether you're doing a good job or not. There will always be someone who can find the opposite thing to say. So in the beginning of the season, Jurgen Klopp is training his players hard. There's that fucking guy who comes out the woodwork every year who says someone's going to get injured. You know what, mate? You're fucking right, because people get injured because they have bodies. But ultimately, he shops himself around off that, because and the same happens in transfers. Someone will call it, someone won't. And ultimately, we all know it. There's the footy people of the world who have shitty accounts, who have bought their views, but ultimately make a fucking business off it.
Oh my God.
And they're
oh my God. And Lawrence, they, no, don't do it.
You know what I'm saying? The guys who basically shot themselves round as ITKs or whatever, and it's bollocks, because actually those guys don't know very much, and there are very few people who do know actually within the industry, and those people probably keep their mouths shut. Do you know why? Because it turns out that transfers aren't actually that interesting.
But you're probably right in that regard, but I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of...
That was tough, that, Lawrence.
It wasn't tough, Dave. It was exactly what we needed all to say and hear.
Hashtag good. But no, I think you speak to there in terms of...
I didn't directly reference anyone. I just said footy. Nope.
Well, you were talking to me, weren't you big cunt?
Jesus Christ.
But Lawrence, I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of you're talking about impatience almost, and that immediate need for success. And it doesn't just come from the clubs, it comes from the fans, it comes from people talking about the game, reporting about the game. Everyone's trying to
it doesn't come from the fans because
they demand success.
No, the fans do not demand success. What the fans demand is exactly what. And over the past week, I think a lot of people have seen the Bobby Robson quotes going around. They demand to have something of value. And I think what people mistake for value is money. And the money within the game is the easiest way to say, well, there's your value. And, you know, we've all seen the Bobby Robson quotes. Chris, you've probably seen them more than anyone over the past week, of people saying, why did I fall in love with Newcastle? Why did I fall in love? You know. Because
I feel people are losing that, surely. People are losing
that. Yeah, but they're losing that because people are taking those shortcuts, or clubs are taking those shortcuts, are mistaking where the value comes from within their club. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm making my all my money off, you know, love and sunflowers, but what I do value is when the club actually values something about the fans. And I don't think every set of fans demand success. They don't. It's just, they just don't. Chris, do Newcastle fans demand success?
No, they demand sporting integrity, which is what
exactly
every fan wants. What I will say is I think as the game has evolved, the connection with the club has become sometimes harder to achieve and feel. Mm. And I think with social media in general, and I speak from experience here, you tweet anything out about a club. Say I tweeted right now something very generic about Sunderland and a feeling about Moyes. I guarantee you I will have at least 3 or 4 replies to that asking for the latest transfer news, the latest rumour, who's the latest player through, have I heard who's going. I open my DMs and we'll get about half a dozen DMs a day asking if I know who it is. And it's, in a lot of ways, it's made the
What's
relationship.
What's your Twitter handle?
At LOZCAST.
Brilliant.
Fill
those DMs.
The thing is, it's made the relationship very inhumane. It's made it very kind of just like you're an ATM machine for transfers. They just come in, ask what they want, and then you give them something and they go away. There's not...
Yeah, but Chris, I understand where you're coming from with that, because actually you're a person who wants to develop a reasonable relationship. I think you see that as a key to developing a wider conversation. But the fact is that, you know, you, all of us work within the industry here, and, you know, we're speaking from a privileged perspective, in the sense that we all got, you know, we all go to talks and things like that, and people go, we're the gatekeepers to this, we're the people who hold the keys to the players, you know, what's important is getting the fans closer to blah blah blah, getting the fans closer to the players. But what we ultimately know is that those gatekeepers need to maintain that status. So it's the same as it's the same as a baker baking a cake, and when you go, and that is brilliant, can you give me the recipe, them going no, because ultimately they want to keep that status. And the fact is that the press have engineered something where, and a lot of people have engineered something where it's like, I'm the only one who can get you the access to this, and it serves them to make that relationship, because it puts them in a position where they can make money from it, they can monetize it, and essentially they give themselves social value. But how long term that is, I don't know.
This is why, as well, I think that fan channels have become so popular. And that is by no means a criticism. It's as much to say that as the relationship between fan and club has eroded and essentially become harder to manage because of globalisation and all that kind of stuff, the fan channels offer you that feeling of togetherness and that feeling of identity that clubs don't. And yet, even the fan channels now, you hear some of them talk about having sources in clubs and all this kind of thing. The transfers for people who maybe don't have those fan channels is a way to feel connected, like you know something. And the relationship between fan and club in general now is so weird and convoluted. It's not as simple and traditional as it used to be now.
I do feel, you're right, Lawrence, in the sense that not all fans demand success, but I feel like they do all demand progress in a way. And I feel there is an impatience for it. Every season they want to see the club building, the club going towards something. And, you know, we see it every season. If they don't quite match those expectations, even if they've done well, then you're gone. I mean, it doesn't so then, just. So I think it's unfair to say it's just the clubs demanding it.
But then
and the
what
clubs
is,
making these
what,
changes.
What is the fans for Leicester City this season?
Surviving the Premier League.
I'd say finishing top half would almost be progress, but I'm not sure the fans would see it that way. I'm not sure the club would see it that way.
But what a lot of people are going to say is, well, last season they won the league, and they're going to have to put it in some sort of context. So it has to be contextualised. It's that some people will take a story and try to make it. Essentially now, I think there are some journalists who focus on the facts, and there are some journalists who focus on their fiction writing, and there are some people who live in you have to be a more discerning reader in a sense, because there are a lot of bloggers out there who don't have a source, who don't have all these kind of things. It's fine to make observations about a club. It all builds the conversation, but at the same time, there are some people who have to make. There are so many stories that are almost just completely made up. I read an article by Stan Collymore the other day, and the article was Jurgen Klopp is going to have to try harder because Ronald Koeman is in the city. Now I don't know at all what that means, because Jurgen Klopp's got to try harder. Jurgen Klopp's got to do better, but purely because Ronald Koeman is at the club. I don't know how that made it into a newspaper or onto a website.
If you want a recognised broadcaster with a history of engaging fans and increasing audiences, Stan is available.
And indeed, a journalist.
He is. He speaks two languages, at least. We should plop him in a few more European capitals during a riot. We'll find out how many languages he speaks.
It's really... interesting discussion we're having. I think it does tie into what Jake's going to talk about later, about how transfers really work behind the scenes and how clubs view them, all this sort of stuff. But to save us having a 3-hour podcast, we should move on to the questions. There's so many questions to get through. But I think it is interesting. I feel like, you know, the transfer market has, it feels like this summer especially, it's starting to spiral out of control. And we're seeing the effects of all the factors we're talking about there, the clubs and the fans demanding progress. And the clubs sort of, they're buying success at any price, essentially, because, as we said, failure is not an option. So many questions coming in this week on Twitter. First up, Bidon Spurs says, will Sterling ever leave Manchester City? What do you reckon, Chris? Some suggestions that his place is under threat from the new signing Leroy Sané today.
I see why. They're quite similar players. I think they have the same deficiencies as they do strengths, though, in that sense. Whether he leaves, I think that'll depend how he performs this summer, or this season, rather. I think the pressure for him is good, though. I think it's the right kind of pressure. It's not an intense expectation. It's an opportunity to grow and improve.
HJD Cornish writes in saying, what do you think about the new Torino kits? In my opinion, the best of the new season so far. While I look up the Torino kit, Lawrence, why don't you tell us what your favourite kit is so far this season? Is there a strip that's stood out for you?
I've always liked the Torino kits, but that their colour makes them very easy to design for, because it's a red. It's a really kind of deep, rich red, which is quite nice. I've seen. Has anyone else seen the new Roma away kit?
The Roma away kit as well. No,
the white one with the like a weird wolf on it. Now it's got like a wolf head instead of.
Cool.
It's their Lupetto badge. I'm reliably informed, which it's to mark their 90th anniversary or something like that.
It looks like a 5-year-old drew it. It's nice.
You're not
though.
A fan.
I've seen it up close. It looks a little bit. It looks.
Fine.
Fine.
The Torino kit is nice. Yeah. Nothing amazingly special for me personally. I think my favourite kit of the season.
What about Real Madrid's? What about the new? You know what? The Barcelona away purple is quite nice. And the new third kit for Real Madrid is quite nice. The one that looks like it's got Pokeballs on it.
What did you make of the so called toxic green? Third Liverpool kit that came out. You found that one?
You know what? I actually do. I quite like that. It's quite a nice kit.
Cool.
I like all the kits this season. They're all nice kits.
Dave, have you got a favourite kit this season? I mean, you're a fan of the Adidas designs for Man United?
Not really, but I like the zebra kit, Juventus zebra kit.
Oh,
very nice. Yeah. Very that's nice.
They're wild pack, isn't it? Do you not like the United very wild. Kit, Dave? Do you not like the United home kit?
They're just a bit like I want some that's what I mean. They're just kits, right? I want something like a zebra. You incorporate like a devil into it, into the shirt somewhere, or you do something a bit different. I think they're a bit lazy,
horns.
Really.
But that's my personal opinion. Horns is what he wants.
Yeah.
Horns on the arms or something.
He wants it to look like a onesie. Does it not worry anyone else that Manchester United do still sort of have the devil on their kit?
They're evil bastards.
Do you never just think that's really unusual that we actually have like what most people say is the worst thing ever to humanity?
I've not considered it in that way until now. You made me rethink everything.
It is like a dystopian future that is sort of like, oh, what
worship the devil?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's the biggest. Edward Wood does have those glazed over eyes, doesn't he?
Chris, do you have a favourite kit this season?
Not really. None have jumped out at me. I haven't really been keeping an eye on them, to be honest.
Really? Excellent. Oh, Chris, that's not like you. Disappointing.
Lue Murad writes in, which team has impressed you most in pre-season thus far? Chris, any shouts?
Again, not really. Barcelona, actually, no, I take that back. I watched Barcelona against Celtic and it was the gap in quality was frightening.
What about Man United, Dave? You had Zlatan scoring that old kick the other day. Bit meh.
Yeah, they're working on it, but I think the team that's really impressed me, PSG. They've been looking really, really good. A lot more direct, like fast in their attacks. Defensively look very, very sound. I think they're going to be a danger in the Champions League for a lot of the big clubs. And you know, they had that lad that went to the under-19 European Championship that came out top scorer. I think his name is something like Augustine or something like that. I think Jean-Francis Augustine, who was directly involved in 7 goals in that tournament. So there's a lot of talent there. Bayern Munich have looked really good. They look a lot more direct. Ribery looks like he's back in the game, and David Alaba, I think, was playing in the band of three behind the striker and scored an absolute corker in their last game. So I think Bayern Munich are looking really impressive in PSG.
Ancelotti just goes into anywhere and he just goes, let's have a bit of fun. Where do you want
to go? It's so good.
Yeah, in the band of three. Yeah, wicked. Let's give it a try. Fucking
I actually did a bit of a banger of a tweet, Lawrence. It was about that, how Ancelotti is so good at moving sides on after sort of a dictator, you know, post Mourinho, goes in and plays, you know, gets Real Madrid to play a little bit more possession-based football, goes to Bayern Munich after another dictator and goes, look, lads, let's get the ball forward a bit. Quicker. Yeah. Simple, isn't it?
I didn't see that tweet, Dave. I got you on mute.
Lue also asked...
mute.
Which...
Hold the bloody horses!
I'm sorry.
Lawrence, was that banter or was that true?
Dave, come on, that's absolute... That's absolute banter.
It's amazing how much me and Lawrence have got in common.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You fucking wankers.
Some digs came through, isn't it? David. Lue also
got you on mute as well, Adam.
Which alternate name, if any, for the podcast did you prefer?
What did we say when we? Someone did suggest last week that we play. We got like the top four or something because Kristen is on the podcast quite often, which is a nice idea, but not going to happen. It's a strong brand. what about? What else did we come up with?
The back three we had, but then that was like, oh, we're too defensive.
We also had the back three, but then we also, Dave also said the back three is also susceptible to issues, at which point we were like, oh yeah, you're right, good point.
Yeah.
Do we also just consider like generic names, like, you know, football fun times and like...
Darth Vader's in the monologue.
Yeah.
I think originally we might have said we need to try and fit the name football in there, but then the front three just sounded right. It just sounded right.
Yeah, as soon as you said it, it just, you know...
It just clicked.
It sounded good, the front three. Kristen and the front three. It just sounds so right, doesn't it?
It's like a weird band name, yeah.
It's like Bob Marley and the Wailers.
That's why you got them t-shirts made.
Here's one. It's quite tough, but I think quick fire answers.
Dave, you're going to be first. All right.
Okay.
Basic question, says Thomas Lang. Who do you think will win the title in the top five European leagues this season? Dave, who's going to win the Premier League?
Manchester United.
La Liga.
Atletico Madrid.
Oh, Bundesliga.
Dortmund.
Serie A.
Juve.
And Liga.
PSG.
Chris. Premier League.
Man City. Juventus.
Wow.
Barcelona. Bayern Munich. And PSG.
Lawrence?
The only way that I disagree with Chris there is in the Premier League. You know, Man City aren't a bad shout.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you know what? I'll go with all those. I think that all those guys have got to be the favourites for each league, though, haven't they, really? Barcelona. The only reason I'd say Barcelona might not win there, they look so laid back right now. It's ridiculous how laid back that side. I'd love to see them come up against a challenge, and I think Real Madrid and Atletico are going to be real challenges to them this season.
I am going to agree entirely with Chris and Lawrence there. Man City, I think Guardiola is going to smash it in his first season.
Come on, let's think outside the box.
Yet more reasons to mute Dave on Twitter.
The True Geordie writes
No way.
He said...
Bloody legend.
Ask Adam if he fancies being on my new show, The Transfer Chancer, where we rate the chances of transfers out of 10. That's a good idea. Original, innovative.
If it was out of
never
5,
seen it before.
That will work.
That'll be my one pointer. Put it down to 5. More bite size.
We should rate. Didn't we originally think of making a channel called? It was going to be something like Football Bi-Weekly. Something like that. That was going to be a good thing. But then we realised, you know what? There's absolutely no merit in stealing other people's ideas and then doing them yourself.
Fucking Lawrence
doesn't seem to have made it throughout the industry.
There's a lot of similar ideas cropping up in the world, guys. You know, these things happen.
We were going to call it the 3 passive aggressive guys who are podcast.
it's an accurate term. We're talking about that's a big YouTube run-in. Trijori, thanks for listening. He's not listening. Walter Smith from Blue Moon Rising TV also writes it. Walter said, top 4 predictions in order and why? Oh, God, that's a tough question. I will go first to give you guys time to think about. Man City are going to top the table, as I just said. Second, I think, will be Manchester United. I think the Mourinho effect and the Pogba effect is going to take hold. Third, Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal always in the top 4. And I think fourth, heart over head, somehow Spurs are going to pip Chelsea and Liverpool and the rest to it. Lawrence, what are you saying?
City.
Mm-hmm.
Spurs. United.
Spurs second.
Yeah. City, Spurs, United. Liverpool.
Wow. Okay, Chris.
Honestly, sounded like Alan Partridge negotiating Lynn's pay rise there. I think City, United, Chelsea, Tottenham.
Ooh. Yes. Dave?
I'm going to go United. Then City. I think United are going to pip City. I think Pep may take a little bit more time to find his best team. Whereas if United, you get Dusan Pogba and this Bay-Chris Smalling relationship works in the first game, I think that's a big thing. Is the faster that can get set, the better. And then I'm going to go with Arsenal in third. And Chelsea in fourth.
I think they are a supernova waiting to happen, Chelsea.
I know, it's going to be fun though, right?
It could really go either way, that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're either going to absolutely explode at the end of the season or they're going to absolutely explode at the end of the season.
Oh, dear. Maximilian V. Sandin writes in. New listener, potentially. At least the first time he's asked a question, I believe. He said, why do you think mid-table sides like Swansea are struggling with the market? Chris, I'm going to come to you on this one. Looks like Ashley Williams could be off to Everton, although there's reports yesterday evening that Swansea have now rejected that bid. It doesn't seem like they're signing a lot of players, although they have tied Gylfi Sigurdsson down to a new deal. Would you agree with Maximilian that mid-table sides are struggling?
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market?
I wouldn't say so much struggling as much as they're a little bit uncertain, because whenever I've read about Swansea and those who make the decisions, they're usually very methodical in their approach. They don't like to waste money. They don't like to do deals that could have a potential to fall flat. And I think that's unsettling them a little bit, is they're so focused heavily on the structure financially of the club, they're not willing to throw that money in like maybe other clubs are.
Good answer. Hard to disagree with that. Matt Brownie Cake, funnily enough, said, would you ever do a podcast with Stan Collymore?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would. I'd love to be passive aggressive towards Stan for an hour.
Yeah, it would be so, like, it would be so transparent. Like,
I think that's the issue, is actually, I think there is a, the thing is with Stan, I think there's a fascinating conversation to be had there with him. It's just that I don't think Stan, and very often with ex-footballers, they just don't get used in the way that I would use them. You know, and I'm not interested in how most people do use them. So, you know, I'm sure he has a lot of interesting things to say. I'm just not sure that everything that Stan says is interesting, in the same way that not everything that everyone says is interesting.
Very true. Ollie Shep 97 says, why do transfers get dragged out for ages? It's annoying as fuck. Ollie, keep listening. Stay tuned. Jake Cohen addresses this very question. Next question is from Ray Burkue. He said, who will win the Ballon d'Or first, Neymar, Bale or Pogba? What do you reckon, Dave?
Neymar, Bale or Pogba?
No,
Gareth Bale.
Oh.
Because he's a little bit further down his career line.
Well, that's right now. Would you agree with that, Lawrence?
I would just wonder if the timing is right for Bale.
That's a fair point.
You know, whether it's the right cycle for him to win it, and whether, you know, I suppose that's the point with Neymar, is actually he's going to be the next big thing.
Yeah, I feel like he's more prolific.
Bale will be right in his peak then, right?
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to work out, and I think probably now he's under Zidane, probably so. So Bale next, but it'll be a close. I mean, it'll be a similar relationship between Neymar and Bale, I'd imagine, by that point than it is with Messi, Ronaldo.
Chris,
I agree with Dave. I think it'd be Bale.
Christian Bale
at City. One writes in, why does Dave hate Guardiola so much? Is it because he's better than Mourinho?
I don't hate Guardiola. I think he's a top manager.
You're saying
Nick Ronaldo's arse, mate, and you hate Guardiola.
Yeah, what's your problem?
Well, I think I've been there's been some miscommunication for not the first time this week. I think Guardiola's brilliant. I think that the Guardiola style of football and the his whole mantra and the philosophy that the side that they've gone down is brilliant. But I also think that the Mourinho side is good. I like how Guardiola moves players on. I like how he likes to split the lines, and that's how he plays teams. I like how he thinks outside the box to solve problems. I think he's a top boss. You know, the amount of tactical evolutions that he's made, the false nine, the inverted fullback, which didn't quite work. You know, bringing Sergio Busquets, Pedro into the Barcelona team, the unity that he brought there. He's a fantastic manager, and there's, you know, he is one of the best in the world, if not the best.
Well, if you love him so much, why don't you marry him? God damn.
And this is just
well yeah. said. Yeah, God. You can't win either way, can you?
He's God, he's such a loser. Dave. Stop licking his ass.
Sal Delgado said to Squawker Dave, who would you choose to be your wingman?
This one's easy.
Of Adam.
It's quite easy, to be honest.
Easy.
Sorry, lads, it's got to be Boltwood.
Why me? What are you talking about?
Boltwood. We've been out a few times actually, around in the clubs in London. And I'm like Boltwood. Can you help me out here, pal? He walks over the Boltwood stroll. Have you seen my mate over there? Look at him. He's been hitting the gym up this week, and then they walk over, and that's it.
He's been hit in the gym.
Oh, and no, if no, you no, want to see more of those nights out, you know, there's lots of places in London that stay open late.
You've had a few people run into you, haven't you, on nights out?
Yeah. I have. I'm not looking forward to them when I'm really plastered. That would be great.
Dave, I'm gutted. I always thought that you picked your best looking mate to be your wingman, but apparently not.
No, I just think
I don't know. I do a good job of it.
He did, Lawrence. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you see, I think me and Bolt would have definitely done this before. It's happened. Yeah. Sorry, mate.
I think that is part of the issue.
I'll tell you what, me and you, though, Lawrence, get on the dating app Double, right?
I already feel sick and deluded. And
My girlfriend said she agreed I've got the skills to be the wingman, so.
Yeah, woo!
Something?
I've even met me. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Chris would be actually.
Shona, do you think Chris would be a good wingman, even though you've never met him?
Look at that nervous laugh. Look what I've got. Look how unsettled I've been already. She's tempted to leave you for me. That's how good I am.
That's... She said they're all such catches, she said.
That's a good point. That is also the laugh of a girlfriend who sort of says,
"What's going on?
Shit about your little podcast. Yeah. Can we just go to bed?"
Yeah, what's going on?
can't fault that joke.
Great question here. Back to an actual football question. Matt says, "Worst signing of the window so far," which is another tough question. Tough questions coming into that. Worst signing so far, Chris. Have you got any suggestions?
Milik, probably.
Yeah. No.
He's a good wingman.
Do you like Milik, Dave?
Oh. Yeah, I like Milik. I think he started very well in the Euros. Missed a few too many chances for my liking, but I think he's all round. He's got the right instincts. He's in the right areas. He's attacking the right space. He's quite a clever forward. And I think in this Napoli side, that is geared towards creating a lot of chances. And if he can get a good run at the start, I think he'll be absolutely fine. You know, they've got Jorginho conducting it, and obviously Hamzik in there, Aran, Insignia. I still think they've got a core to a team that... You just put another striker in there and they'll do apps. You know, they will compete for the Serie A title.
How much potential is there, Chris, for Moussa Sissoko to Real Madrid for 30-odd million? Has that got a lot of potential to be the worst transfer to window, or do you think this is some sort of masterstroke?
Oh, at the minute, Milik's holding the trophy waiting for Sissoko to take it off him. I have emotional feelings about Sissoko that cloud judgment slightly, but he's not worth 30 million. And I also think he'd really struggle in a team like Real Madrid.
What a good one.
Not so much a good one, just a one that's going to want to try and pass the ball a bit and not use the physical assets. I mean, he's got exceptional, truly world-class pace, stamina, athleticism, all that stuff. I don't think his technical skills are good enough for
a team. Does that not partly come down to coaching then? But I mean, yeah, I guess that's part of the problem, isn't it? Is that actually Benitez is an excellent sort of tactical coach. I'm not sure how good he is on sort of raising a player's technical ability.
Mm.
I think that he very much thinks that's down to the player. And then I'd imagine that if you go to Real Madrid, there's almost maybe it's more balanced under Zidane.
I think I saw, was it Verizon? Bought someone called Yahoo for $4.8 billion. I don't think there's any no value in that one. Yeah, there's no value in that one.
Great deal.
Has that legitimately gone through as someone that writes for Yahoo? I'm curious.
No, I don't know. I typed in like worst deal on Twitter, and that's popped up straight away. Yahoo. I was like, Jesus.
Just like to take this opportunity to praise our glorious new overlords, Verizon.
Yeah. Have you got any suggestions, Lawrence?
Verizon 94 million. No, you know what? I think that's absolutely fine. I'm trying to think of a worse transfer.
It's hard to be. How can you judge it? I mean, obviously, we're making some massively
It's sort of based on one or two friendlies where they've had 10 minutes to sort of, you know.
I've seen a lot.
Wijnaldum's not scored a goal.
With that said, a lot of people have suggested Wijnaldum could be in that category.
Who could?
Schweiz is a bit of a gamble.
I think Wijnaldum could be in that category just because the problem with him is if he doesn't score goals, you really do question what he's putting in. So if he's played in a deeper role, which I think Klopp played him in the other night, then I think he'll struggle.
I think it's also going to take time for Klopp to find the right orientation for each of those players. I think it's one or two guys who he knows roughly, preferably where Coutinho plays, roughly, preferably where Chan plays. It's sort of how those players begin to complement each other. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, I mean, it's worth mentioning Wijnaldum, but it would be so unfair to call him the worst signing of the window so far, considering he's had, like, you know, 45 minutes.
I've seen quite a lot of people suggest that Vincent Janssen could well prove to be the worst because he's coming from the Eredivisie, as Chris mentioned earlier. Doesn't necessarily have the best record to the Premier League, but he's hoping. Fingers crossed, touch wood, all that. Matt Brownie Cake again with another question. Sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about the crazy transfer fees. Let's ask you this one, Lawrence. Are quality strikers, midfielders and defenders in short supply because football is not as good as it used to be?
No way.
Is football, I don't want to swear, is football shit, Lawrence?
Yeah. No, it isn't. No, it's not shit. It's fine.
And where are all the quality strikers? Defenders
everywhere.
And midfielders.
All Where's all the Garys?
Yep.
There's loads. There are a lot of quality players out there right now. We're just finding that, I think, just because they're not on the market doesn't mean they're not good. I mean, you know, some players have just find the right place to be. You know, Griezmann doesn't want to leave because he's in a place where he's happy. You know, Zlatan has gone to Manchester United. He's a quality striker. Daniel Sturridge is a good striker at Liverpool. Harry Kane's a great striker at Spurs. You know, Aubameyang is a fantastic striker at Dortmund. Lewandowski's a great striker. There's a load of great strikers out there. It's just because they don't want to move doesn't mean they're in short supply. What you're saying there is they're not being transferred and therefore they're not around. Just because the market is not there for them doesn't mean they're... You know, Lukaku's moving for ridiculous money. Higuain's moving. There's a load of great examples.
Dybala!
I mean, the point is, those people are there. Just because they don't want to move doesn't mean they're not there. And I think that shows sort of the myopic nature of the transfer window. That suddenly you sort of think, well, you know, obviously you're always looking for upgrades, but actually I think there's a number of managers out there and look at what they have and coach it to get better. And, you know, I think there's a number of people who are doing that at the moment.
Here is an interesting question. I'm going to give it to Chris. Simran Janda, thank you so much for your question. He writes in, he says, essentially he wants us to weigh up 120 million on Pogba versus 120 million on the spine, potential new spine of this Man City team. He's talking John Stones, Ilkay Gundogan, Nolito, and of course Leroy Sané. He says surely the latter is the better business. Chris, how would you sort of weigh that one up?
Would you rather have a pound of grapes or a pound of apples?
Holy smokes, Batman!
I love grapes.
Essentially, that's what you're asking me to do.
Apples is that?
But in terms of.
Well, they've both got different needs as well. I don't think, for argument's sake, that Man United need the three players that City are buying in the same way.
What needs do apples have?
So many.
Why don't they just make a pie?
Exactly. See, you've got so
I've never
many
had
options.
A grape pie.
It's clearly the apples. What an idiot I am.
Yeah.
Maybe
we should invent
They've
that.
Got two different set of needs. And I think,
honestly,
if I was personally starting a club tomorrow and buying one, and I didn't have a budget,
I'd start with football players.
I'd probably buy Pogba.
Not great. All right.
I think there's two.
If it was on FIFA, I'd buy the Pogba. I mean, that means nothing really. Dave, I want to give you the final question.
Oh crap!
And it's this handsome guy writing in, Adam the Wingman Boltwood. He writes in and he says,
"Someone already made that as a Twitter account, despite the fact that the show's not even come out yet."
No, well, I'm just making it up, Lawrence.
I got you. Okay.
The question is, Dave.
Yes.
Wayne Rooney's testimonial tonight. Wednesday.
Yep.
Is he a Manchester United legend for you, Dave? And if not, why not?
Well, I think the first difficulty for being a Manchester United legend playing in Manchester is that originally he's from Liverpool. Obviously, there's great rivalry between the two brilliant cities, but it's always going to be there. And inherently, he's not one of our own, as a lot of the London clubs do sing songs about that. But also on the flip side of that, that he's tried to leave Manchester United on two occasions. You know, I love Wayne Rooney before the two transfer requests, but the two transfer requests shows a real lack of trust in the club, or a lack of trust in an institution that's put so much into a raw 18-year-old and turned him into a superstar. And from that moment where Wayne Rooney needed to take control of the club and be the club and evolve players around him to be as good as he is,
be the club.
He stopped. And he's been strolling for the last 4 years, not really doing anything. And I do feel that if Wayne Rooney wanted to position himself as a Manchester United legend, even though he has scored all these goals, he should have not handed in that transfer request, and he should be the one that's driving this Manchester United side forward, not in a way holding it back like he has done over the last few seasons.
I do have to admit there's a lot of narrative construction with Wayne Rooney, and ever since that, you know, every asset of Nike's has been very well constructed. It's happened since the Michael Jordan years, and we reference it over and over and over again. Ronaldo, Zlatan, any of those guys. Now, I think that if Ronaldo or Zlatan had held a club to the same sort of ransom that Wayne Rooney did, I think it would be seen as a more powerful power play. But the fact is, because it's Wayne Rooney, and because of the other factors that Dave has already described, and also the fact that Wayne Rooney's agent is not the most popular guy in the game, it doesn't serve him in the same way. I think if Zlatan had done that at another club, we might have seen that as a power play. We'd have seen that as a Zlatan tells the club, shape up or I'm out.
But then similarly, it would be, for me, if Zlatan said that at my football club, I'd feel the same way. With David De Gea, I'm not a massive fan of David De Gea as a person because he wanted to leave Manchester United. And that's the thing, it's nothing to do with...
Difference. Dave, there's a massive difference between David De Gea and Wayne Rooney trying to leave.
Why?
Wayne Rooney was... Because David De Gea is trying to go back to a country where he's from to play for one of the biggest teams. To support a club,
I don't care about that. The biggest team in the world for me is Manchester United. Yes, I don't give a shit about Real Madrid. And that's what I'm bringing again, Lawrence. It's the fan representation of why Wayne Rooney will never be a Manchester United legend, or even David De Gea won't be a Manchester United legend because these things have happened. And they've been very, very clear.
That's so rubbish. Because it's so hard to resent a player wanting to go back to their own country.
Easy. It's simple.
Especially when there are so many ungrateful people or people who are so quick to turn on a guy. Now, Wayne Rooney, I can understand that because that is multiple instances. But David De Gea, now, Dave, it's the same as, the number nine coming to you and saying, Dave, we've got a job for you. Do you want, a big stats company coming to you and going, Dave, we want you to come here. And you go, sure, I'd love to.
Oh, shit.
I mean, you're going to take the job.
Just drop my phone, mate. No comment, Lawrence. But this is not a football club that I it's a different thing. I work for a company, not a football club. If I work for a football club, it'd be very different.
It is. I feel Wayne Rooney's had an absolutely fascinating career at Manchester United. I mean, you talk about all the different factors there, Dave, and all the different ups and downs, all these massive dramas bullshit. And narratives.
Lawrence, I learned that from you.
Chris, how do you feel? Because obviously Dave has got a very emotional reaction to it. And I think Lawrence is making a good point to try and draw a distinction essentially between different players and different situations. But in terms of Rooney, the whole story of him, that massively the most promising young England teenager ever, signing back in 2004, he's almost the club's record goal scorer, and yet the things he's done throughout his time at Manchester United, it feels like, as Dave said, he never really took the club in his heart, and the fans have never really reciprocated any sort of similar feeling, essentially.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, his first, I would say, big moment in his career after that famous goal against Arsenal is the T-shirt that says, once a blue, always a blue. Now, the rivalry between...
Now we're awake, it's blue.
Now, the rivalry between Man United and Everton is not as strong as, let's say, Man United and Liverpool. it still does denote a love for the club that then he can't really talk about in the same way. Equally, his kids. I think one of his kids, Kai, is an Everton fan. You could also argue from a performance standpoint, compare him to Scholes, Giggs, Neville, those kind of players. He didn't age as well as them. His performance has dropped off as he's got older, whereas those players were able to maintain it and exude the kind of quality that I think you bestow onto a legend at a club like Manchester United. So I just think from a lot of kind of more emotive points, but then also just the performance one, I don't think he ever did enough. And then as Dave kind of puts, yes, there's an emotional tie in terms of holding the club to ransom. I think it's also the way he does it as well. He could have done it in a lot more respectful, quieter way than he did, whereas actually it came out in the press, it wasn't the prettiest. It actually seemed to me more motivated by money than anything
Although
else.
One thing that's definitely interesting there was Sir Alex's reaction to that at the time.
Well, that's the thing. You could argue it changed Sir Alex's legacy slightly because he was the only player to ever make Sir Alex Ferguson bow to demands.
But I also think that partly shows that I think Sir Alex was slightly in cahoots with what Wayne was doing and was slightly proving a point that to the Glazers through what they did.
You're the Fergie. You're one of the Fergie Rooney conspiracy theorists.
I am. Yeah, I do think. I think Fergie did have some power plays against those guys, as most managers have. I don't think he was willing to be a mouthpiece for the Glazers in the same way that some people believe he was.
Anyway, my mistake. Guys, on that note, we are going to talk to Jake Cohen right now. It's this week's talking point. Ties into what we've been talking about all episode about the transfer market going crazy. He busts some transfer myths and gives us some insight into how transfers really work. It's the height of silly season with Paul Pogba on the verge of completing his world record move back to Manchester United. But how exactly do these huge transfers work? Joining me to help shed some light on the market and bust some transfer myths is sports lawyer Jake Cohen from the firm Mills & Reeve. Jake, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me, Adam. I really appreciate you inviting me on the show.
So, Jake, you wrote a brilliant article on the set pieces last week where you sort of delved into some behind-the-scenes info on the financial side of the transfer market, which, as we're all seeing this summer, is absolutely booming. $1 billion spent already this summer. Lots of talk of spending being out of control. What's fueling this huge boom we're seeing in the world of football, Jake?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for the kind words about the article. You know, I really appreciate it. And, I love the set pieces. They're a great group of guys to work with. So, you know, with regards to, you know, all the money that we're seeing being spent, you know, the headline figure is, of course, the new Premier League TV deal, which kicks in for this season. You know, the previous deal was already gigantic, and this new deal sees the revenue increase 71%. So we're talking billions and billions of pounds. Add on to that, the more modest increases in TV revenue that the Bundesliga, Serie A, League One, and La Liga are enjoying as well. That's another several hundred million pounds in the market. Add on to that, the increased commercial deals that, the top clubs are enjoying, you know, like we see with, Barcelona's new Nike deal, with the new Nike deal that Chelsea is set to sign in a couple years' time. You know, all these new kit deals, the stadium deals, and then add in the heavy investment we're seeing from China. You know, it's only reasonable that we're going to start to see, we have seen transfer fees, really start to spike.
Of course, as fans, you know, we obviously only see the very basics of a transfer deal reported. Usually, a fee and the wages, although you do see different countries and newspapers reporting different figures. I mean, we saw it back in 2013 with the Bale deal, the Madrid press reporting one thing, the British press quite another. And you often see clubs themselves release inaccurate figures, as was the case with Eliaquim Mangala to Manchester City, and of course Neymar to Barcelona. I mean, why is there this lack of transparency over transfer deals?
Oh, I'm sure it's a great question. You know, I think, you know, it's just an inherent part of the football industry is this lack of transparency. You know, most of these clubs are privately held, and so therefore they don't have any public financial reporting standards beyond the bare minimum that is required by the likes of Companies House and their sort of domestic equivalent of Companies House in other countries. So, you know, with clubs not obligated to report transfer fees or wages, that's, I think, why we see a lot of these figures being thrown around. So one example is, I think, Sadio Mane, right, who just transferred to Liverpool. I've seen, you know, some great journalists and some great papers report the fee anywhere between, you know, 26 and 36 million pounds. So which is it? And I think, you know, there are tens of thousands of us covering football, right? But only very few have cultivated the sources necessary to actually, you know, nail down these financial figures, right? And so the rest of us are sort of relying on them to provide us with that information. And those journalists, in turn, are relying upon their sources, who will be on one of two sides of the table, right? So they'll be on the club side or they'll be on the player side. So if they're talking to the agent, for example, and they're asking what the player's wage is, maybe the agent will tell them the basic wage, all of their possible performance bonuses that can be met. And maybe he'll even throw in, you know, the separate image rights payment still as well. So his total compensation for a player may be $130,000, for example, a week. But the basic wages might only be $90,000. And so if a different journalist talked to his source on the club side that may just sell him the basic wages, you know, to make it seem, you know, like they negotiated a great deal. So even though the player could be earning anywhere between $90,000 and $130,000, I think, you know, depending on which source, you know, is giving you this information, you know, it'll be reported as either figure.
What about some of the transfer myths? You do hear about these sorts of sports brands. They're trying to encourage their clients to maybe move to a certain club. In some cases, rumors that they're willing to subsidize the fee. Any truth to that?
No. You know, to be quite blunt, you know, I don't think there is any truth to that. You know, with Pogba specifically, you know, he's an Adidas-sponsored player, potentially moving from Adidas-sponsored Juventus to Adidas-sponsored Manchester United. So it's a wash for Adidas. You know, maybe, you know, they'll sell a few more shirts with Manchester United because Paul Pogba is there, but then they'll also probably sell fewer shirts now that Paul Pogba is not, or he may no longer be a Juventus player. So, you know, with, you know, the idea that, you know, brands would subsidize transfers, like, I don't think there's really any merit or truth to that either. So, you know, if put yourself in a position of like an Adidas executive, right? Like, why would you spend £10 million to subsidize a football club's transfer when you could just use that £10 million to sponsor that player individually or to sponsor two other superstar players? You know, maybe you convince, you know, another top football to move from Nike to Adidas. And not only do you have, you know, a brand new superstar athlete, you also sort of like undercut the competition. Subsidizing transfers is not smart business. And, you know, Adidas and Nike, they earn more in days than most Premier League clubs will earn in a year. And, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, they know what they're doing.
I mean, another one we saw doing the rounds last week, another transfer myth, as it were. The claims that Zlatan Ibrahimovic has essentially sold £75 million worth of shirts since his move to Manchester United, which people are saying is effectively going to pay for the Paul Pogba deal. Is there any truth to that one?
No, there's no truth to that whatsoever. You know, with regards to Adidas' deal with Manchester United, Adidas pays them £75 million a year as a licensing fee. And so they're not paying for a tiny logo on the Manchester United shirt. Of course, being associated with Manchester United does have benefits. You know, you're associated with, you know, one of the biggest football clubs on the planet. You know, it helps you enter emerging markets. But the main reason why Adidas is paying United £75 million a year is because they're going to double that investment, at least with regards to shirt sales. Adidas keeps 100% of the revenue from Manchester United shirt sales until the shirt sales reaches an absurd amount and then or an absurd number of sales, and then Manchester United will receive a small royalty. The industry standard sees clubs earn around 10-15% of gross sales from the shirt. However, because Manchester United's deals is so gigantic, you know, they get that huge £75 million upfront payment, which I think is double their next competitor. I think Chelsea, with the upcoming Nike deal, they'll come close. But right now, I think they're earning even less than half what United is currently earning. So if that's £75 million, United gets to keep 100% of the revenue. In fact, when that deal was announced, actually, 2 years ago this month, the Adidas CEO said he was confident that they would see £1.5 billion of revenue from this, which is twice the investment that they paid for the licensing deal for United. And again, you know, these are multi-billion dollar companies. You know, they have more money, you know, under their couches than football clubs, have on hand. So, this is a business deal for Adidas. They're going to profit from it. And, football clubs, the reason why they'll, enter into these deals with these kit manufacturers is that they're football clubs. You know, football clubs are generally engaged in football things. You know, they just don't have the infrastructure required to manufacture and distribute, millions of kits, on a global level. In fact, many clubs actually outsource their online shops. If they're not able to handle an online shop, obviously they're not able to, manufacture millions of kits, which is why they bring in Adidas, Nike, Puma, New Balance and the like, to engage in this sort of like revenue sharing licensing deal, which, I mean, it benefits both. But, I mean, to say that, Manchester United keeps all of the shirt money on top of the $75 million a year that Adidas pays them, like, there's just zero logic in that. You know what I mean? Just common sense naturally dictates that makes absolutely no sense for Adidas. And the nice thing about this deal is that Manchester United and Adidas are both publicly traded, which means that their reporting requirements are a lot more stringent than, some of these private clubs. So for anyone that's really interested in the deal, you can actually go online and like look at the details of the deal yourself, because it's just available for stockholders. So,
I mean, with the Paul Pogba deal on the verge of completion, Jake, a lot of debate. Is he worth it? Is he not? £100 million, a huge amount of money. Some fans are looking at transfer fees as a proportion of revenue as a way to almost justify the outlay. You know, essentially it's broadly similar to the percentage Juan Sebastian Verón cost the club 13 years ago in terms of the percentage of the club's revenue. Is that really a useful way to try and put transfer fees into context?
It is an interesting sort of stat. I think it was sort of thrown out there in the mainstream by a guy called Christopher Johansson, and he just put together a bunch of charts. I think just threw them out on social media. And there was a lot of interest surrounding them. I think for historical context in terms of transfer fees, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I don't think it accurately reflects player costs because, of course, there are wages involved, agents' fees, image rights payments, and just sort of like the way that transfer fees are recorded on the books. So clubs will calculate. Let's say Paul Pogba sold for £100 million. Manchester United won't record that £100 million, in the 2016 fiscal year, right? 2017 fiscal year. They'll record it as £20 million a year for the next 5 years. It's just called amortization, which is just like a universal accounting practice, that football clubs engage in as well. It's definitely interesting to put it into a historical context. It kind of shows that, this huge fee actually isn't that huge considering, the sort of like outlays, that clubs have spent in the past, but it's not an accurate depiction of player costs. I mean, it's definitely an interesting stat for sure.
There are always those, of course, you say, don't talk about spend, talk about net spend. I mean, you're talking there about how the clubs actually account for transfers. Is net spend something that they take into consideration when they're weighing up transfer deals?
Net spend is not like something clubs take into account, because net spend, right? It's just like transfers in, transfers out. Like it doesn't, factor in wages, which is significant. For the big clubs, that's up to £200 million a year. So you need to account for that. It also fails to take into account the nature of free transfers, right? So like Zlatan coming to United on like the net spend books or whatever, it would be recorded as zero. Same thing with like Radamel Falcao leaving United. Like that net spend would be zero, but United actually freed up millions of pounds in wages that they could go out and spend on Daley Blin, Morgan Schneiderlin, and whoever. Net spend. If you're interested in player costs, like I would just try to like erase that from your mind. I think what you want to look at, if you're really interested in calculating player costs, is the transfer fee, the length of the player's contract, in his wages. So, harkening back to that Pogba example, if Pogba signs a 5-year deal and the transfer fee is £100 million, we'll see that £100 million that are broken down in the club's books at £20 million a year. Similarly, if it's a £25 million player and he signed a 5-year deal, it'll be £5 million over the next 5 years rather than £25 million now. And so, we'll take that, what we call like an amortized fee, and we'll add his wages to that. So if the player the 25 million pound players on a 100,000 a week. That's 5.2 million a year. So we take that 5 million in amortization, that 5.2 million in wages, and we can see it'll cost about 10.2 million a year before. We'll just say it'll cost 10.2 million a year for ease. There's another, well, there's several other costs that are involved when buying a player. So for Premier League clubs, there's something called a transfer levy, which means that the buying club has to pay an additional 4% of the transfer fee to the Premier League, and that goes to subsidize grassroots football and player pensions. There's training compensation and solidarity payments that might need to be paid to the players' former clubs. And then, of course, there's a separate image rights payment for players that have independent commercial value, and then the agent fees as well. But, yeah, I mean, in rough terms, yeah. I mean, if you just look at the amortized fee and the wages, you'll have a pretty good idea of what the player is costing the club.
I mean, you said it there. There's all these different financial factors, wages, image rights, not just the fee. And of course, agent fees. We're seeing Mr. 10%. It's become a huge debate, a huge discussion point in the transfer market this summer. We've seen three Mina Raiola clients moving to Manchester United. Paul Pogba, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and of course, Henrik Mkhitaryan. Jorge Mendes has got his own fingerprints all over the transfer market in the past few years. Just how much influence and power do these sort of people, these sort of super agents have in the world of football?
You know, when you mention, you know, Raiola, George Mendes, Fernando Felicevic, you know, Kia Drabchin, you know, these are, you know, the top agents at the field. And, you know, they got that way because, you know, they've been successful for their clients. Like, their obligations are to their clients. And if they weren't doing, you know, a fantastic job on behalf of those clients, like, we wouldn't be talking about them because, you know, they wouldn't be at the top of the field. You know, for me personally, you know, there are people in every profession that sort of drag you down. You know, there are poor football journalists. You know, there are poor lawyers. You know, there are poor doctors. Of course, they're going to be poor agents. And, you know, I think a lot of these agents will get painted with a sort of, like, unfair brush because, you know, these top agents, you know, they've been able to retain their clients. Like, right now, so, for example, the FA standard agency agreement, it can only be signed a maximum of 2 years. So every 2 years, the agent needs to convince his client, you know, to sign up with him again. So he has to keep, you know, continually proving his worth to the player. And since, you know, the agent commission are directly tied to the success of the player, the agents naturally have a vested interest in seeing the player succeed. So, you know, let's say, like, you weren't already in a dream job at TFR, right? Let's say, you know, you were at some other publication and you were trying to get to TFR. And so, you know, and there was an agent that was going to take 5% off the top to help you get there. And he was going to get you a pay raise that was more than 5%. Wouldn't you hire an agent? I mean, I know I would. So I think agents do have a place in football. You know, I think, you know, they do provide valuable services.
Of course, when looking at these huge transfers and these huge amounts of money spent, Jay, clubs have to consider, fans always debate about, of course, maximising value. And we're looking at some of these transfers, especially in the Premier League this summer, it has to be said, do you think clubs have lost sight of this? Or is it simply fair enough, you know, they're generating more revenue, more money than ever, so they're naturally just going to be spending more?
Well, I mean, it's a tough balance of strength. I mean, naturally, you know, with the way that the UEFA and the domestic financial regulations are, you know, a club can only spend, you know, more or less what it earns. So the more a club earns, the more it can spend, you know, and some clubs like Chelsea and Manchester City, like everything they earn will go right back onto the pitch. For clubs like, you know, like Arsenal, Manchester United, you know, the owners are not focused on winning at all costs. It's a business for them. So obviously, you know, they're going to, you know, take some off the top and put it in their own pockets, which, you know, the businessman is fine to do. It's probably a tough pill to swallow if you're a fan of those clubs. But, yeah, you know, as long as, you know, clubs are, you know, trying to maximize value in a way that doesn't just completely gouge fans, you know, I'm all for it. So if there's ways to monetize digital rights, if there's ways to start monetizing social media, you know, if you can get big commercial deals, you know, negotiate huge TV deals, you know, that's all great. You know, when you start talking about increasing ticket prices, you know, I think that's where I, you know, and most match-going fans would tend to push back, you know, given that there was so much money in football, especially in the Premier League, the match day revenue and ticket sales is just a smaller and smaller piece of the pie. So there's no reason to gouge fans. You know, I'm a huge supporter of, 20 is plenty, subsidizing away travel for away fans. And I think that's something that club should continue doing. There's actually an economic reason for it too, right? Because, the 40, 60,000 fans in the stadium, they reflect the club's brand when they're being shown on TV, to the tens of millions worldwide. And the fans of that club will take their cues from the Mats going fans in the stadium. So if the fans are not happy with, like, the current manager, for example, and they see signs, like sack so-and-so, or, protesting against ticket prices, we've seen huge banners at, Emirates, at Anfield, protesting, exorbitant ticket prices. That's a terrible look. And it affects how not only, the fans across the world will perceive you, it'll also affect how, sponsors perceive you as well. So I think there is an economic argument for keeping the Mats going fans happy, because they are, an extension of the brand.
With that in mind, though, I mean, you're talking about all the other considerations that go into a football club in terms of expenditures and revenue. Do you think a club can really justify spending £100 million, say, on just a player?
Yeah, with revenues all what they are, there's more money in football than ever before. That's just the way the market is going. And I think, an easy way to look at it would be that if, £25 million was good value for a player last summer, that same player is now worth £40 million just because of, the natural transfer inflation that comes with, more and more money pumped into the market. So if he's a £100 million player, maybe he's a £70 million player. And for, the guys that, the guys that we're talking about, the Paul Pogba's, for example, he's 23 years old. There's a finite amount of superstars in the world. If I was running a football club, I'm a Chelsea fan. So I think most Chelsea fans are happy and not running the club. I'm much more of an off the pitch guy than an on the pitch guy. But if I was running a club, I would try to spend superstar money on superstar talent because there's such a small number of superstars. And when one becomes available, I think you really need to throw, whatever resources possible to get one of those. Because not every club has, a transcendent superstar, and your opinions on Pogba may differ, but he's 23 years old, he's already accomplished a lot in his career, he's only getting better. I would consider him a superstar. So if you do too, then £100 million is probably a fair fee for him.
Well, guys, absolutely fascinating stuff from Jake. Absolute pleasure to have you on the Front Three. If people want to find more of your work, where can they go?
All right. So, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Jake F. Cohen. And then my firm, Sports Law Team, actually just started Twitter. You can find them at MR Sports Law. So, yeah, just look out for us there and look forward to, chatting with you 140 characters at a time.
Well, guys, absolutely fascinating stuff from Jake Cohen, sports lawyer from Mills & Reeve. Do again, check him out on Twitter. Check out Mills & Reeve as well and check out Jake's article is in the description of this very podcast. It's a fascinating read, so do go and check it out.
Why would you check out Mills and Reed? What are you looking for? No, they've started representation or something. What?
No, they've started quite a good Twitter account, Lawrence.
Okay.
And they're tweeting about the financial side of football, which I find pretty interesting. And
if you're looking for representation as a player, come to us.
Less of that sort of thing. More, they're getting out there, Lawrence. Getting the name out there.
Good for that. A Twitter account is the right way to do it.
Exactly. If you want to follow our Twitter account, it's at the Front Three on Twitter with the number, not the word. If people want to follow your Twitter account, then Lawrence, where should they go?
At K Hennage, K-H-E-N-E-A-G-E. DM me. I do love a good message, especially about transfers.
Loves it. Chris, where can the good people find you?
At the Lad Bible.
Yeah.
Nice. Perfect.
Say that actually.
Say no more. And Dave, where can the whole find you on Twitter?
Hardcore bitches.
There's no point finding me on Twitter this week because I'm going on all day. But next week, search for Adam Boltwood on Twitter and then follow.
Perfect. Guys, do go and check out Dave Talks on YouTube. Great YouTube channel doing Manchester United scout reports, all sorts of great stuff. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, the comments are a little bit salacious. The comments are a bit salacious. All right. Yeah. Lawrence could learn a thing or two from this. Yeah, go fuck yourself. All right, mate.
Cool. do come over to the Football Republic as well. My face is there, Dave's face is there, Lauren's face is there, Chris's face is there, so you can see us all on there. So do come and check us out and subscribe if you haven't already. Until next week, have a bloody good week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.